I would like to welcome you at our next podcast, this time with Alexander Beribes. We will be talking about the Visegrad 4 and about democracy in the Visegrad 4 countries. It is a project that is supported by the Political Institute Topaz in cooperation with Konrad Adenauer Stiftung. Alexander has been working with Konrad Adenauer Stiftung since December 2019. He works in the Department of Democracy, Rule of Law and Political Parties as a Policy Advisor for European Affairs. Thank you, Alexander, for accepting our invitation.
Thank you.
And welcome to the podcast series that we've been working on this year. We've already had a few podcasts on the Visegrad 4 as part of the project of democracy in Visegrad 4 countries. Now, this time we would like to look at the part of the external link of the Visegrad 4 to Europe, with a specific focus on the Conference on the Future of Europe. So thank you, Alexander, again for accepting the invitation and for sharing your thoughts on the conference and the V4. My first question then would be if you can briefly tell us what actually the Conference on the Future of Europe is and what is the approach of the Visegrad countries to the conference?
Yeah, thank you first of all for your invitation, your kind invitation. The Conference on the Future of Europe is a citizens' participation process. One of the main aims of this process is to search for answers to citizens' concerns and to include people from all corners of Europe in this discussion process. The Conference on the Future of Europe is ambitious. It's an ambitious process, sometimes underestimated. There are differences in perception of the process. Some see the Conference on the Future of Europe as a step towards a European federal state. National conservatives, on the other hand, want the EU to be understood as an alliance of nation states. However, in most cases, there is a shared understanding that a discussion process can be useful, in particular due to the consequences of the pandemic and the need to discuss the lessons learned from the pandemic from different angles. The Slovenian presidency of the Council of the EU regards the Conference on the Future of Europe as one of its four priorities, which underlines and the potentials of this process. Concerning the Visegrad group, there is a common perception that this process has the potential to be useful. The approach is, however, reserved. This is also due to the fact that the Visegrad states are often perceived as monolithic. However, the Visegrad states often differ in their positions. There are some announcements concerning the Conference on the Future of Europe that were included in statements and declarations. For instance, the prime ministers, the presidents of the Visegrad states underlined several times the importance of the V4 cooperation. The speakers of the parliaments of the Visegrad states declared that the parliaments will coordinate their efforts. There is, however, no common Conference on the Future of Europe agenda of the V4. Hungary assumed presidency of the V4 this summer. The corresponding program advocates to focus in particular on three topics: competitiveness, climate transition, and digitalization. One could understand this as a proposal to leave topics that are more controversial aside. However, this is the Hungarian program and not the V4 program. One more aspect: in 2022, the Czech Republic will assume the presidency of the Council of the EU. The Conference on the Future of Europe will, as we know now, present the conclusions during the French presidency of the Council of the EU. This should not be understood as the end of the Conference on the Future of Europe, so the Czech Republic will have an important role in this process.
That is definitely going to be very interesting, given also that we will have the parliamentary election in Czech Republic in October. And the timing is very complicated, so we'll see how all that will fit together. We, of course, also have the 3Cs initiative. Would you mind to tell us more about how this falls together with the V4 and the Conference on the Future of Europe?
Yeah, thank you. The 3Cs initiative is a loose cooperation format as the V4. The Three Seas Initiative brings together 12 EU member states, the four Visegrad states plus Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Bulgaria, Romania, Slovenia, Croatia, and Austria. The main idea behind the Three Seas Initiative is to accelerate the development of the so-called North-South infrastructure in Central and Eastern Europe. The initiative comprises more than 100 million people and is based on three priorities: transport, energy, digitalization. During the last 5 years, new elements became part of the 3CI. I refer to earlier to the 3Cs Initiative Investment Fund and the Business Forum. It is, however, important to know that this region benefits very much from several EU infrastructure programs, such as the European Regional Development Fund that aims to strengthen economic, social, territorial cohesion in the European Union, the Cohesion Fund that concerns for the 2021-2027 period all participants of the Three Seas Initiative despite Austria, the European Social Fund, the Just Transition Fund as a new instrument of the European Green Deal. I'm mentioning this because there is a green dimension, meanwhile, within the Three Seas Initiative. Of course, the European Agriculture Fund for Rural Development. The European Commission, Germany, the United States are partners of the Three Seas Initiative. There are also other countries that support or are interested in supporting the 3CI, among them United Kingdom, Japan, South Korea, Qatar. There are different approaches to the 3Cs initiative among the V4 countries. The Polish President Duda sees Poland as the leader of the 3CI. Poland has a dominant position inside this format. The Polish Development Bank, Bank Gospodarstwa Krajowego, is the largest investor in 3CI. Mrs. Daszynska-Muzyczka, the president of the management board of the Polish Development Bank, is the chairperson of the 3Cs Initiative Investment Fund. One of the aims of President Duda is that Poland is included in such international forums as G20. The Polish president argues, for instance, that Brazil must be involved into the 3CI, so Poland pursues an international approach. Hungary prioritizes the V4 as its main platform in CEE in Central Eastern Europe and understands the Visegrad Group as a counterbalance to the German-French cooperation. The Czech Republic and Slovakia call for a more balanced approach and do not support the 3CI as a geopolitical format. It is important to note at this point that only Poland and Hungary were represented by the presidents at the Three Seas Summit presidential panel this July in Sofia. There is a clear understanding that it is necessary to cooperate, for instance, also with the immediate neighborhood. The Bulgarian president invited the president of Greece to participate in the 3CI summit this year. Poland, Ukraine, and Lithuania have established in 2020 a new regional cooperation initiative, the so-called Lublin Triangle, and the corresponding declaration mentions all the Three Seas Initiative. The Three Seas Initiative is not set in stone. Some argue that Greece could become sooner or later part of the initiative. Greece has joined, for instance, the so-called Craiova Group that was established in 2015 and consists of Romania, Bulgaria, Serbia, and Greece. So far, only EU members are part of the 3CI, so it is difficult to say, for instance, non-EU members will be once part of this format. However, again, this initiative is not set in stone, and especially Poland is very much in favor to include at least Ukraine in this format.
I mean, I guess part of the approach that we see, the kind of Czech lukewarm approach, is seen from how little attention it actually receives compared with the B4, including the media, and how much even the politicians and the elites actually, if you would compare how often they talk about the B4 and how often they talk about the 3Cs, there is clearly a difference. So thank you for explaining something that many of us are not quite sure. What is the connection with the B4 and what it actually does? At some point, you actually mentioned the Green Deal, which I find very interesting and very important, because earlier you wrote that actually the climate policy is a nice example of where it was possible to find a compromise. So, and it's something that is not very easily accepted in the Visegrad 4 countries. There is a lot of controversy as well. There is actually even a conflict going on between Poland and Czech Republic regarding a mine on the border. So if there was a compromise reached in such a complicated topic, why do you think it was so difficult for the European Union to find a compromise on migration and asylum with the V4?
First of all, the European Green Deal offers like real new opportunities. However, the corresponding transition is, of course, also connected to challenges. The situations in the EU member states differ from each other, and therefore willingness to compromise is indispensable in this process. There are also various approaches, as you mentioned, to migration issues. Migration is one of the main topics to discuss during the conference on the future of Europe. Sometimes the impression arises that there is no reasonable chance for a compromise, and that the Visegrad states are responsible for that or are to blame. However, the discussions in some Western European societies underline that a broader approach is needed. In some Western societies, there's also some kind of polarization on this issue. And therefore, such initiatives as the Schengen Forum of the European Commission that was held last November for the first time are good contributions to the process to find a sustainable approach that includes positions from all corners of the EU. This is a new page in European history, the Conference on the Future of Europe. So it is important to discuss the migration issue not based on the experiences of 2015 and 2016, but to be open for an open debate, for a real dialogue. So a compromise is needed that includes positions and approaches from all sides, from the east and from the west, from the north and the south.
Thank you for explaining that. It is, of course, one of the things that we often hear regarding the Visegrad countries, and also connected actually a lot at some point with the topics of migration and the disagreements or the lack of agreement between the countries and the EU. And that is the current political situation in actually all of the V4 countries. You wrote, and I quote, regarding the national conservative forces, it would be unwise and short-sighted to evade the debate on the nation state's role in the European Union. Otherwise, this field would be left to the Eurosceptics, unquote. I would like, if you would not mind, to explain this, what you mean and how that is actually important, because I do share the belief that part of the problems that we see with the democratic forces in the V4 was actually caused by the elites avoiding some of the complicated topics and then leaving the ground for some of the more extreme forces, if I can call it that way.
The EU member states are the so-called masters of the treaties, and therefore national positions, national approaches, national strategies are important in the process of the European integration. They are important in the process of the Conference on the Future of Europe. They will be very much important also in the end of this process, especially when there will be the question what's to do with the results, how to deal with the results. There is the so-called joint presidency, which consists of three European institutions, the Parliament, the Commission, and the Council. And therefore, opinions that it is kind of possible to exclude national perspectives of the topic, how to deal or how next steps of the European integration might look like, is not according to the design of the European Union. And to leave this topic to some forces that have a totally different understanding of what it means, masters of the treaties, is, I think, short-sighted, and therefore I believe that the debate on national sovereignty must be linked to the debate of European sovereignty.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, we've seen what happens if the topic is kidnapped by only a particular perspective, and it's very difficult to actually reinstall it back. And I believe it's one of the main things that the Conference on the Future of Europe should do, and that is include as many voices as possible so that, you know, some of the concerns are actually real concerns, and they are valid concerns, and we do need to bring them up and talk about them and try to address them, just like anything else. So I believe that what you say, that's why I also wanted to talk about this. I believe it's really important because some of us think that, and we started, actually that's what started to happen, because it's been discussed by Eurosceptics so much that we started to see the debate on nation states as something actually negative. Well, they also play a very positive role in the entire process. And even if not, they are indispensable part of the process.
Exactly. They're indispensable. Therefore, it is important to deal with the national perspectives as well.
Continuing with the topic of as the nation states are connected with the intergovernmental procedures in the European Union. So with this respect, what does the Conference on the Future of Europe say about intergovernmental approach, and where is the European People's Party perspective in on this?
One of the main questions is the institutional reform. This question will be discussed in the Conference on the Future of Europe. Some EU member states insist on the institutional status quo. Some demand changes. As we discussed some minutes ago, the EU member states are the so-called masters of the treaties. Therefore, it is indispensable to deal with the national perspectives. Furthermore, there are some countries that started a national campaign as kind of like in addition to the Conference on the Future of Europe, to the addition to the process at the European 11 level, and some states are hesitant. And for sure, the main focus will be in the next time on Europe's economic recovery from the pandemic. And in general, it is needed to mention that the nature of the Conference on the Future of Europe has changed. It is not the same idea behind it that it was when the Conference on the Future of Europe was proposed before the pandemic has started. Now, the Conference on the Future of Europe gained through the pandemic even more importance. The EPP links the process of self-reflection with the Conference on the Future of Europe. The EPP adopted a position paper in February 2021. The EPP group positioned itself actually very, very early. And we will see at this this year, this summit, what discussions will be highlighted within the EPP. EPP is the largest political entity, so there won't be any surprise that there will be a major discussion on the future of the EU, because the EPP also, to some extent, reflects a lot of opinions within the European Union.
Definitely. It's going to be very interesting to follow, and is already very interesting to follow. There is something that I have to ask regarding the V4, probably not closely connected with the conference, but I will ask you anyway. And that is, what's the role of Russia with respect to the Visegrad 4? How would you evaluate it? I mean, given, of course, the more recent developments, both in the EU's neighborhood, but also in the case of Czech Republic this spring. How does that affect the, of course, specifically Russian-Czech relations, but also has it been reflected in the relations between Russia, V4, and the EU in general?
The question how to approach Russia is perhaps the most controversial topic within the V4. Poland's national security strategy adopted in 2020 last year defined Russia as the most serious threat. At the same moment, we see that the Russian-Hungarian relations are close. No other EU head of government has met as often with Russian President Putin as the Hungarian Prime Minister Orban. The Russian president described Hungary as his priority partner in Central Europe already in 2013. In March 2016, EU foreign ministers agreed on the so-called five guiding principles for EU-Russia relations, like, for instance, the full implementation of the Minsk Agreement and also closer ties with other states in Eastern Europe. This is quite a balanced approach, and these five guiding principles form the compass of EU's Russia approach. The German Chancellor Merkel visited Russia not so long ago and underlined that there are deep differences. However, dialogue is important and indispensable. Towards the Czech Republic and Slovakia are squeezed within Poland and Hungary. The Czech Republic pursued a pragmatic approach towards Russia. At the same time, the Czech Republic acted according to the traditions of Václav Havel. For instance, we see that when asylum is offered to people in Eastern Europe that are in difficult situations where the authoritarian states or forces are trying to shrink the spaces for their actions, not only in the political sphere, also in the cultural.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the very complicated topics, not just for the V4, but for the EU and its neighborhood policy. And we will see how it is going to develop further. When we look at the V4 and its role within the European Union, what would be your recommendations for the Visegrad countries and what would be your recommendations for the EU's approach to the V4?
I think the most important and that is not a surprise, dialogue. And the Conference on the Future of Europe offers the right framework for such an open debate on the future of the EU, where different angles, different perspectives can be included. And I think that also the Czech presidency of the Council of the EU is a big opportunity for the Visegrad states, although it's not a Visegrad presidency, but the Czech presidency, but still to include the positions of Central Europe into the broader framework. And at the same time, it is a chance, an opportunity for the other member states of the European Union to use the Czech presidency of the Council of the EU to look closer at the positions in this region, to see the diversity in this region, to look behind the surface and to get more acquainted with the positions, the diverse positions within the Visegrad societies, the Czech society.
Thank you. I believe that this is one of the most important things. And you also mentioned that in the policy paper, which you also wrote for us. And I, of course, very highly recommend reading the paper that, and that's something that the other authors covering the V4 mentioned, that it's not just one homogenous group of countries, that each of the countries is different and also within the societies, we see a lot of differences. And so the kind of postal look of more recently rather negative view of the V4, it should not be limiting us in approaching them and in making them actually important part of the debate on the future of European integration. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. As I said, you also wrote a policy paper on the V4 and the Conference of Europe. So I very much recommend to anyone who is interested to read your thoughts as well. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. And we hope to see you soon again.
Thank you.
Thank you too. Goodbye.